Okay, let's do the prayers to Tulsi Devi tonight. How about that? Tulsi Devi is Brinda Devi, and she's in charge of arranging the scene, weather, everything, the forests, the animals, everything for Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Tulasi Krishna Vyase Namo Nama Namo Nama Tulasi Krishna Vyase Namo Nama Radha Krishna Seva Bhava Heya Milasi Radha Krishna Seva Bhava Heya Milasi Radha Krishna Seva Bhava Heya Milasi Radha Krishna Seva
Dina Krishna Dasi Goy. Hey, yeah. Shana, that's it, Koi. Hey, ain't a more holiday. I'm going and pray, Sada, you the Pazi. Namo, Nama. Chani, Kani Chala, Chani Chani Pranjandi, Pratap Sina, Pati Pate, Kani Kani, Chappapani, Ramahachat, Kani Chala, Chani Chani Pranjandi, Pratap Sina, Pate Bani, Ramachati, Bani Chala, Chani Banashani, Ramachi, Yena, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Atiya Devi, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paramacharya Alta Teta Satashi Shimad His Divine Grace Savaya Chananad Vatavananda Gosami Srila Prabhupad Kijai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupad Kijai Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrindi Kijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Vata Vrindi Kijai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Srimati Lasa Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Kijai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So, let me read the translation. O Tulsi, beloved of Krishna, I bow before you again and again. My desire is to obtain the service of Shri Shri Radhakrishna. Whoever takes shelter of you has their wishes fulfilled. Bestowing your mercy, you will make them a resident of Vrindavana. My desire is that you will also grant me a residence in the pleasure groves of Shri Vrindavan Dham. Thus, within my vision, I will always behold the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna. I beg you to make me a follower of the coward damsels of Praja. Please give me the privilege of devotional service and make me your own maidservant, this very fallen, lowly servant of Krishna. Praise may always swim in the love of Shri Radha and Govinda. And by the circumambulation of Srimati Tulsi Devi, all the sins that one may have committed are destroyed at every step, even the sin of killing a Brahmin. Tulsi Devi ki jai. So, let's go on to Krishna book. We are reading about the interaction between Lord Shri Krishna and Rukmini, where Lord Shri Krishna has attempted to get Rukmini angry with him, but he's been unsuccessful. She actually fainted, feeling a great threat that Krishna was going to leave her, whereas he wasn't going to leave her, but he was trying to tease her and have some angry words, which he's going to explain. And then later on in the chapter, we'll read today, how she turns around Krishna's teasing and turns it into something that's truthful, rather than something that's just teasing and a made-up story. So, let's continue. Om Gana Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who has so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, let's share the screen and get back to Krishna book. There we go. And get it set up. So, alright, I think we are ready to go, ready to roll. Good. Okay, right in the middle of the chapter, Krishna is talking to Rukmini. So, he's explaining his motivation behind trying to tease her and threaten her with divorce. threaten her with that she would have to find another husband. My dear, beautiful wife, and actually, incredible, they didn't have a divorce at that time. People had to stick it out and be faithful. My dear, beautiful wife, you know that because we are householders, we are always busy in many household affairs, and for a time, and long for a time, when we can enjoy some joking words between us. That is the ultimate gain in household life. Actually, householders work very hard day and night, but all fatigue of the day's labor is minimized as soon as they meet husband and wife together and enjoy life in many ways. Lord Krishna wanted to exhibit himself as being like an ordinary householder who delights himself by exchanging joking words with his wife. He therefore repeatedly requested Rukmini not to take those words very seriously. In this way, when Lord Krishna pacified Rukmini by his sweet words, she could understand that what he had formerly said was not actually meant seriously, but was spoken to evoke some joking pleasure between themselves. She was therefore pacified by hearing the words of Krishna. Gradually, she was freed from all fear of separation from him, and she began to look at his face very cheerfully with her naturally smiling face. She said, "My dear lotus-eyed Lord, your statement that we are not a fit combination is completely right. It is not possible for me to come to an equal level with you, for you are the reservoir of all qualities, the unlimited supreme personality of Godhead. How can I be a fit match for you? There is no possibility of comparison with you, who are the master of all greatness, the controller of the three qualities, and the object of worship for great demigods like Brahma and Lord Shiva. As far as I am concerned, I am a product of the three modes of material nature, which impede the progressive advancement of devotional service." And obviously, she is Shakti Tattva. Shakti, she means the potency of the Lord, the spiritual potency, the Lord expansion, ultimately from Srimati Radharani, but actually through Chandravali. So she's not a jiva soul, and she's not covered by the three modes of material nature. "When and where can I be a fit match for you, my dear husband? You have rightly said that you have taken shelter in the waters of the sea as if you were afraid of the kings. But who are the kings of this material world? I do not think that the so-called royal families are kings of the material world. The kings of the material world are the three modes of material nature, who are actually its controllers. You are situated in the core of everyone's heart, where you remain completely aloof from the touch of the three modes of material nature, and there's no doubt about it. You say you always maintain enmity with the worldly kings. But who are the worldly kings? I think the worldly kings are the senses." That's true. "They are most formidable, and they control everyone. Certainly you maintain enmity with these material senses. You are never under the control of the senses. Rather, you are the controller of the senses, Rishi Kesha. My dear Lord, you have said that you are bereft of all royal power, and that is also correct. Not only are you bereft of supremacy over the material world, but even... because Krishna has someone else take care of it. But even your servants, those who have some attachment to your lotus feet, also give up supremacy over the material world. In other words, the material world is supreme over them, because they consider the material position to be the darkest region, which checks the progress of spiritual enlightenment. Your servants do not like material supremacy. So what to speak of you? In other words, Krishna has his agents control the material world, and Krishna never gets in touch with the material energy. That's one way of taking this. Actually, Krishna glances at the material energy in terms of his expansion as the Mahavishnu, and that glance is known as Shambhu, who does contact the material energy. That is, Lord Shiva Shambhu. Shambhu is one of the forms of Lord Shiva, and he does contact the material energy. My dear Lord, your statement that you... Whoops. Where are we? Anyway. Give me a second. I pressed the wrong button. Okay. Alright, leave it down. My dear Lord, your statement that... keep pressing the wrong button. Your statement that we are not a fit combination is completely right. There's no possibility. Alright. We went over that already. The kings of the material world, the three modes of material nature, who are actually in control, you are situated in the core of everyone's heart. Where you remain... Yeah, we went over that. Sorry, I pressed the wrong button. Okay. Your servants do not like material supremacy, what to speak of you. My dear Lord, your statement that you do not act as an ordinary person with a particular aim in life is also perfectly correct. Even your great devotees and servants, known as great sages and saintly persons, remain in such a state that no one can get any clue as to the aim of their lives. Human society considers them crazy and cynical. Their aim of life remains a mystery to the common human being, the lowest of mankind. Can know neither you nor your servants. A contaminated human being cannot even imagine the pastimes of you and your devotees. O unlimited one, when the activities and endeavors of your devotees remain a mystery to the common human beings, how can your motives and endeavors be understood by them? All kinds of energies and opulences are engaged in your service, but still they rest at your shelter. In other words, Krishna, having all these energies are his first-class servants. In other words, as we described in a previous class, the energies of Krishna, or first-class servants, do what the master wants without being asked. Second class does what the master wants upon being asked, and does it gladly. Third class does what the master wants upon being asked, but grudgingly. And tenth class doesn't do it. So Krishna's energies are first-class servants. They do what Krishna wants. He doesn't have to ask them. And so, anyway, so that's the point. All kinds of energies and opulence are engaged in your service, but still they rest at your shelter. So another point is, like Prabhupada one time said, you know, who is crazy? We consider those who are simply engaged in material pursuits without recognition that ultimately it's all going to be taken away. That's crazy. And so, basically, and they consider us having a higher goal in life, long-term, eternal-term, they consider us crazy. So anyway, and Bhagavad Gita also states this, what's night for the self-realized sage is daytime for the ordinary persons, and vice versa. In other words, vice versa is what's night for the ordinary persons is daytime for the self-realized sage. You have described yourself as penniless, but this condition is not poverty. Since there's nothing in existence but you, you do not need to possess anything. You yourself are everything. Unlike others, you do not require to purchase anything extraneously. With you, all contrary things can be adjusted because you are absolute. You do not possess anything, but no one is richer than you. In the material world, no one can be rich without possessing. Since your lordship is absolute, you can adjust the contradiction of possessing nothing, but at the same time being the richest. In the Vedas, it is stated that although you have no material hands and legs, you accept everything offered in devotion by the devotees. You have no material eyes and ears, but still you can see and hear everything everywhere. Although you do not possess anything, the great demigods who accept prayers and worship from others come and worship you to solicit your mercy. How can you be categorized amongst the poor? So in other words, everything in one sense is Krishna. He doesn't have to possess everything. Everything is already in his possession, because everything comes from him. And also, Om Purnamada Purnamidam. So, my dear Lord, you have also stated that the richest section of human society does not worship you. This is also correct because persons who are puffed up with material possessions think of utilizing their property for sense gratification. When a poverty-stricken man becomes rich, he makes a program for sense gratification due to his ignorance of how to utilize his hard-earned money. Under the spell of the external energy, he thinks that his money is properly employed in sense gratification, and thus he neglects to render you transcendental service. My dear Lord, you have stated that persons who possess nothing are very dear to you, renouncing everything. Your devotee wants to possess you only. I see, therefore, that a great sage like Narada Muni, who does not possess any material property, is still very dear to you. And such persons do not care for anything but your lordship. In other words, Narada Muni, being cursed by Daksha, cannot even stay in one place for more than a few moments, except if that place happens to be the holy dham of Vrindavan. And that's, of course, where Narada Muni has his ashram, right on the banks of Narada Kund. And Narada Muni instructed Kayadu, the mother of Prahlad Maharaj, at that particular ashram. A very beautiful place. Right next to Govardhan. I'm thinking of Govardhan Radhakund. So right next to Govardhan, and right near this place called Kushama Sarovara, on the other side of the street. My dear Lord, you have stated that a marriage between persons equal in social standing, beauty, riches, strength, influence, and renunciation can be a suitable match. But this status of life can be possible only by your grace. You are the supreme perfectional source of all opulences. Whatever opulent status one may have is all derived from you. As described in the Vedanta Sutra, and is also in the Srimad Bhagavatam 111, Janmad Yasya Yataha, that is, the absolute truth is that from which everything comes. So, and who owns everything? You are the supreme source from which everything emanates, the reservoir of all pleasures. Therefore, persons endowed with knowledge desire only to achieve you and nothing else. To achieve your favor, they give up everything, even the transcendental realization of Brahman. You are the supreme ultimate goal of life. You are the reservoir of all interests of the living entities. Those who are actually well-motivated desire only you, and for this reason they give up everything to attain success. They therefore deserve to associate with you. In the society of the servitors and served in Krishna consciousness, one is not subjected to the pains and pleasures of material society, which function according to sex attraction. Therefore, everyone, whether man or woman, should seek to be an associate in your society of servitors and served, which is a very interesting statement. In other words, we serve each other. Not that we only serve God. If we were thinking we only serve God, that means we're Kanishta Adhikaris. Kanishta means materialistic devotee. So we should serve the other devotees, and not just the spiritual master. We should engage in loving exchanges, according to Rupa Goswami, with all the devotees, according to their position, Dadati Prati Granati Guyamakyati Prichati Bhunte Bhajate Chaiva, doing some service, giving prasadam, hearing from others, revealing your mind, giving presence, accepting presence, etc. This is very important. This is a society of servitors and served. And Krishna becomes more pleased in that way. You are the Supreme Personality of God, and no one can excel you, nor can anyone come up to an equal level with you. The perfect social system is that which you remain in the center, being served as the Supreme, and all others engage as your servitors. In such a perfectly constructed society, everyone can remain eternally happy and blissful. My Lord, you have stated that only the beggars praise your glories. And that is also perfectly correct. But who are those beggars? Those beggars are all exalted devotees, liberated personalities, and those in the renounced order of life. They are all great souls and devotees who have no other business than to glorify you. Such great souls forgive even the worst offenders. These so-called beggars execute their spiritual advancement in life, tolerating all tribulations in the material world. My dear husband, do not think that I accepted you as my husband out of my inexperience. Actually, I followed all these great souls. I followed the path of these great beggars and decided to surrender my life unto your lotus feet. See how intelligent Rukmini is? She turned Krishna's words around, where Krishna was actually criticizing himself and denigrating, which is the same thing, denigrating or putting down himself, and she turned them into praise. Now, this is quite a common thing that's done. Actually, even Rupa Goswami does this in many cases, that there's two or three meanings of words, and one time a demon may be criticizing Krishna, and that criticism actually turns out to be praise. You have said that you are penniless, and that is correct, for you distribute yourself completely to these great souls and devotees. In other words, the devotees own Krishna. Krishna se tumar, Krishna dite par. A devotee owns Krishna, so Krishna has given himself away. He's become a servant of his devotees, and that's the pure devotees, and especially Srimati Radharani. Knowing this fact perfectly well, I rejected even such great personalities as Lord Brahma and King Indra. My Lord, the time factor acts under your direction only. The time factor is so great and powerful that within moments it can affect devastation anywhere within the creation. Considering all these factors, I thought Jarasandha, Shishupal, and similar princes who wanted to marry me to be no more important than ordinary insects. My dear all-powerful son of Vasudeva, your statement that you have taken shelter within the water of the ocean out of fear of all these great princes is quite unsuitable, for my experience is that with you contradicts this. I have actually seen that you kidnapped me forcibly in the presence of all these princes. At the time of my marriage ceremony, simply by a jerk to the string of your bow, you very easily drove the others away and kindly gave me shelter at your lotus feet. I still remember vividly how you kidnapped me in the same way that a lion forcibly takes its share of hunted booty, driving away all small animals within the twinkling of an eye. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, I cannot understand your statement that women and other persons who have taken shelter under your lotus feet pass their days only in bereavement. From the history of the world, we can see that princes like Anga, Prithu, Bharata, Yayati, and Gaya were all great emperors of the world, and there were no competitors to their exalted positions. But in order to achieve the favor of your lotus feet, they renounced their exalted positions and entered the forest to practice penances and austerities. When they voluntarily accepted such a position, accepting your lotus feet as the all-in-all, does it mean that they were in lamentation and bereavement? My dear Lord, actually today I read about Dhritarashtra going to the forest, but he was not able to actually meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He became a Dhira instead of a Narottama. He actually performed yoga, and he became, Dhira means like sober, peaceful, and absorbed in Brahman, etc., like that. But because he had committed offenses against the devotees, he was not able to take up devotional service, nor did Vidura push him in that regard, because Vidura knew that Dhritarashtra was unable to do that. Anyway, little side information. It's very interesting. Bhagavatam is quite interesting with a lot of information. I'm reading the first canto again. My dear Lord, you advise me that I can still select from the princely order and divorce myself from your companionship. But my dear Lord, it is perfectly well known to me that you are the reservoir of all good qualities. Great saintly persons like Narada Muni are always engaged simply in glorifying your transcendental characteristics. Someone who simply takes shelter of such a saintly person immediately becomes freed from all material contamination. And when he comes in direct contact with your service, the goddess of fortune agrees to bestow all of her blessings. So if you want Lakshmi's blessings, this is how you get it. If you just worship Lakshmi like many people do, you will not get her blessings. You will get the kicks of Durga. Because when you separate or try to separate Lakshmi from Krishna, you can't do it. First of all, you can't. Because as soon as you try, what you have is Durga. You do not have Lakshmi anymore. Just like Ravan. Ravan had Maya Lakshmi, not the real Lakshmi, or Maya Sita, which is Lakshmi, same thing. And therefore, that was the cause of his demise. So in the same way, we have to be very careful. You worship Lakshmi Narayan, Radha Krishna, Sita Ram. But not just Sita, not just Lakshmi, not just Radha. Under the circumstances, what woman who has once heard of your glories from an authoritative sources and has somehow or other relished the nectarian fragrance of your lotus feet would be foolish enough to agree to marry someone of this material world who is always afraid of death, disease, old age, and rebirth? Definitely, that is true. When you get old, you're, wow, it's going to end. Am I sick? Phew. How am I going to be reborn? I don't want to be reborn. I therefore accepted your lotus feet, not without consideration, but after mature and deliberate decision. My dear Lord, you are the master of the three worlds. You can fulfill all the desires of all your devotees in this world and the next because you are the supreme soul of everyone. I have therefore selected you as my husband, considering you to be the only fit personality. You may throw me in any species of life according to the reactions of my fruitive activities, and I haven't the least concern for this. My only ambition is that I may always remain fast to your lotus feet. For you can deliver your devotees from illusory material existence and are always prepared to distribute yourself to your devotees. As it's said by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kita Janma Hoy Yata Tu Yadas, that I'm willing to take birth even as an insect, but an insect who is your devotee or in the house of your devotees. Bhadhir Mukha Nahiyash, Janma. Brahma Janma Bhadhir Mukha Janma Nash, that I'm not willing to take birth even as Lord Brahma, who is not your devotee. My dear Lord, you've advised me to select one of the princes such as Shishubala, Jadasana, or Dandavakra, but what is their position in this world? They are always engaged in hard labor to maintain their household life, just like the bulls working hard day and night with an oil pressing machine. They are compared to asses, beasts of burden. They are always dishonored like dogs, and they are miserly like cats. Whew. They have sold themselves like slaves to their wives. Any unfortunate woman who has never heard of your glories may accept such a man as her husband, but a woman who has learned about you, that you are praised not only in this world, but in the halls of the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, will not accept anyone besides you as her husband. A man within this material world is just a dead body. In fact, superficially, the living entity is covered by this body, which is nothing but a bag of skin, decorated with a beard and mustache, hairs on the body, nails on the finger, and hairs on the head. This is pretty scatological. Within this decorated bag are bunches of muscles, bundles of bones, and pools of blood. always mixed with stool, urine, mucus, bile, and polluted air enjoyed by different kinds of insects and germs. It's an apt description of what we're walking around with. You know, the thing, we go to the mirror on the wall, who is the most attractive of sannyasi of them all. But that's what we're trying to make attractive. And the ladies, of course, they're putting earrings and nose rings on this decorated bag. As describes Rukmini, don't blame me, that's her statements. A foolish woman accepts such a dead body as her husband, and in sheer misunderstanding loves him as a dear companion. This is possible only because such a woman has never relished the ever blissful fragrance of your lotus feet. My dear lotus-eyed husband, you are self-satisfied. You do not care whether or not I am beautiful or qualified. You are not at all concerned about it. Therefore, your non-attachment for me is not at all astonishing. It is quite natural. You cannot be attracted or attached to any woman, however exalted her position in beauty. Whether you are attached to me or not, may my devotion and attention be always engaged at your lotus feet. The material mode of passion is also your creation. So when you passionately glance upon me, I accept it as the greatest boon of my life. I am ambitious only for such auspicious moments. So Krishna is definitely detached. He doesn't have any attraction to the material world. However, Krishna is attracted to devotion, the devotee's devotion. After hearing Rukmini's statement and her clarification of each and every word he had used to arouse her anger of love toward him, Krishna addressed Rukmini as follows. My dear chaste wife, my dear princess, I expected such an explanation from you, and only for this purpose did I speak all those joking words, so that you might be cheated of the real point of view. Now my purpose has been served. The wonderful explanation you have given of my every word is completely factual and approved by me. O most beautiful Rukmini, you are my dearmost wife. I am greatly pleased to understand how much love you have for me. Please take it for granted that no matter what ambition and desire you might have, and no matter what you might expect from me, I am always at your service. And it is a fact also that my devotees, my dearmost friends and servitors, are always free from material contamination, even though they are not inclined to ask me for such liberation. My devotees never desire anything from me except to be engaged in my service. And yet, because they are completely dependent upon me, even if they are found to ask something from me, that is not material. Such ambitions and desires, instead of becoming the cause of material bondage, become the source of liberation from this material world. My dear, chaste, and pious wife, I have tested on the basis of strict chastity your love for your husband, and you have passed the examination most successfully. I have purposely agitated you by speaking many words not applicable to your character, but I am surprised to see that not a pinch of your devotion to me has been deviated from its fixed position. My dear wife, I am the bestower of all benedictions, even up to the standard of liberation from the material world, and it is I who can stop the continuation of material existence and call one back home, back to Godhead, Krishna. Phew. Yes, only Krishna can do that. And Radharani, who controls Krishna. One whose devotion for me is adulterated worships me for some material benefit, just to keep himself in the world of material happiness, culminating in the pleasure of sex life. So, adulterated means that there is some worship of Krishna, maybe some love of Krishna, but it's mixed with fruit of desire, or mixed with desire for liberation. One who engages himself in severe penances and austerities just to attain this material happiness is certainly under the illusion of my external energy. Persons who are engaged in my devotional service simply for the purpose of material gain and sense gratification are certainly very foolish, for material happiness is based on sex life, is available in the most abominable species of life, such as hogs and dogs. There's no difference in quality. No one should try to approach me for such happiness, which is available even if one is put into a hellish condition of life. It is better, therefore, for persons who are simply after material happiness and not after me to remain in that hellish condition. Wow. Material contamination is so strong that everyone is working very hard day and night for material happiness. The show of religion, austerity, penance, humanitarianism, philanthropy, politics, science, everything is aimed at realizing some material benefit. For the immediate success and material benefit, materialistic persons generally worship different demigods. And under the spell of material propensities, they sometimes take to the devotional service of the Lord. But sometimes it so happens that if a person sincerely serves the Lord at the same time maintains material ambitions, the Lord very kindly removes the sources of material happiness. Not finding any recourse in material happiness, the devotee then engages himself absolutely in pure devotional service. That is a fact. So, you know, we find that, of course, in the case, many cases, like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was worshipping Krishna for material things, and then Krishna took away that desire. As soon as Dhruva Maharaj saw Krishna, Dhruva Maharaj said, you know, I was looking for some broken piece of glass, and now I found a valuable gem. So therefore, we don't discourage people. Krishna says we don't discourage people who have material ambitions or desires. We just say, worship Krishna, akama sarvakama mokshakama dharati, tivrena bhakti yogeni jeta purusham param. Whatever your desire is, worship Krishna. Because by coming in contact with Krishna, especially if you're worshiping Krishna under or connected to a pure devotee, you know, under the guidance of a pure devotee or connected to a pure devotee. For example, if you're worshiping Krishna in the Krishna conscious movement, you're connected with his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, then you'll get purified. Whatever your desire is, free of material desires, full of material desires, or even desires of liberation. That's what Bhagavatam says. Lord Krishna continued, my dear best of queens, I clearly understand that you have no material ambition. Your only purpose is to serve me, and you've long been engaged in unalloyed service. Exemplary, unalloyed devotional service not only can bestow upon the devotee liberation from this material world, but it also promotes him to the spiritual world to be eternally engaged in my service. Persons too much addicted to material happiness cannot render such service. Women whose hearts are polluted and full of material desires devise various means of sense gratification while outwardly showing themselves to be great devotees. It's a dishonest. We should be honest. My dear honored wife, although I have thousands of wives, I do not think any of them can love me more than you. The practical proof of your extraordinary position is that although you have never seen me before our marriage and had simply heard about me from a third person, still your faith in me was so much fixed that even in the presence of many qualified, rich, and beautiful men of royal order, you did not select any one of them as your husband, but insisted on having me. You neglected all the princes present, and very politely you sent me a confidential letter inviting me to kidnap you. While I was kidnapping you, your elder brother Rukmi violently protested and fought with me. As a result of the fight, I defeated him mercilessly and disfigured his body. At least his hair was cut. At the time of Aniruddha's marriage, when we were all playing chess, there was another fight with your brother Rukmi on a controversial verbal point. And my dear brother Balaram finally killed him. I was surprised to see that you did not utter even a word of protest over this incident. Because of your great anxiety that you might be separated from me, you suffered all the consequences without speaking even a word. As a result of this great silence, my dear wife, you have purchased me for all time. I have come eternally under your control. You sent your messenger inviting me to kidnap you. And when you found that there was a little delay in my arriving on the spot, you saw the whole world as vacant. At that time, you concluded that your beautiful body was not fit to be touched by anyone else. Therefore, thinking that I was not coming, you decided to commit suicide and immediately end that body. My dear Rukmini, such great and exalted love for me will always remain within my soul. As far as I am concerned, it is not within my power to repay you for your unalloyed devotion to me. Sounds like what Krishna said to the gopis. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, certainly has no business being anyone's husband or son or father, because everything belongs to him and everyone is under his control. He does not require anyone's help for his satisfaction. He is Atmarama, self-satisfied. He can derive all pleasure by himself without anyone's help. But when the Lord descends to play the part of a human being, he plays a role either as husband, son, friend, or enemy in full perfection. As such, when he was playing as the perfect husband of the queens, especially of Rukminiji, he enjoyed conjugal love in complete perfection. According to Vedic culture, although polygamy is allowed, none of one's wives should be ill-treated. In other words, one may take them equally as an ideal. One may take many wives only if he's able to satisfy all of them equally as an ideal householder. Otherwise, it is not allowed. Lord Krishna is the world teacher. Therefore, even though he had no need for a wife, he expanded himself to many forms as he had wives, and he lived with them as an ideal householder, observing the regulative principles, rules, and commitments in accordance with the Vedic injunctions and the social laws and customs of society. For each of his 16,108 wives, he simultaneously maintained different palaces, different establishments, and different atmospheres. Thus the Lord, although one, exhibited himself as 16,108 ideal householders. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 60th chapter of Krishna, Talks Between Krishna and Rukmini. So Prabhupada basically did not want polygamy in the Krishna consciousness movement. You know, at certain times in the beginning, Prabhupada sort of maybe toyed with the idea, but then he saw that people were simply interested in what? Increasing lust. You know, that was Prabhupada's observation. So, that's the end of the 60th chapter of Krishna, Talks Between Krishna and Rukmini. And we ended exactly at the right time to take questions. So, today we did 60B. Okay. And 60th chapter. And tomorrow we will do... Oh, not tomorrow. Okay, here's an announcement. Tomorrow, of course, we have our Sunday program, and we're going to be celebrating Govardhan Puja. And so I'm going to be doing probably a slideshow or something like that, or a PowerPoint about Govardhan and Govardhan Puja. I'm not sure right now. And that'll be like a half an hour early than we normally have. And I'm not sure how it's going to be on the screen. At least the screen meaning on Zoom and YouTube and Facebook. So it's not going to be on Krishna Book tomorrow. So try to understand that. It'll be a half hour earlier, if things go according to schedule, which they don't often go, because we're going to have a lot of people tomorrow, probably several hundred, 400 or 500 people for Govardhan Puja. Okay, so let me allow you all to unmute yourselves. Give me a second. And you can ask questions. Or you can type in the chat window. Or you can raise your hand. Okay. Rakesh, you have a question. Yeah.
Please accept my humble obeisances.
Haribol.
Gurudev, my question is regarding, we cannot worship like Sita or any form of deities, like the female form, I guess, by itself. We have to worship like Radha and Krishna together. But
yes,
we worship Durga Devi by itself. Since I am in my family, like we worship Durga Devi by itself. Like we have a temple of Durga Devi. So is that right or wrong?
Well, I mean, Durga is married to who?
Lord Shiva.
That's right. So it should be Durga Shiva. I don't advise worshiping Durga because Krishna says in the Gita, kamastastha ritagyana prapachyante devata, those whose intelligence has been stolen by kam, they approach the demigods. And what are you going to get from Durga? Unless you are worshipping Durga for pure devotional service. That's different. That's what the gopis did. They worshipped a form of Durga called Kachiyani. But if someone approaches a demigod for material benefit, then they're less intelligent. I mean, it's of course it's better than thinking that one is the controller. I guess to step up in one sense. But, you know, Krishna says less intelligent, bereft of intelligence. Ritta jnana prapajatena devata is the statement of the Bhagavad Gita. I know it's a family tradition, you know, just like we have so many family traditions in America. We have Christmas and things like that. So, yeah, it's a family tradition. So one, for social reasons, you may have to do that. But actually, do you think Durga's accepting your worship? You know, that's another question. Whether Durga is accept, she's another name for Durga is Vaishnavi. She's a Vaishnava. And so we should, if we want to please Durga, we worship her in terms of her identity. Her identity, just like Radharani's identity, is as the Krishna's consort, or the feminine counterpart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Durga's position is, of course, she's the counterpart of Lord Shiva, but Durga and Lord Shiva are devotees of Krishna, devotees of Ram. So, you know, if you worship someone and you don't understand who and what they are, then in one sense it can be compared to bribery. It's like Prabhupada said that, you know, you may try to bribe a government servant, and you get something very, very quickly, but it's bribery. It's a vidipurvakam. That's another statement from the Bhagavad Gita. A vidipurvakam means it's not a vidipurvakam. It's not a proper vidi or path. Anyway. But anyway, if it's a social thing, you know, whatever, you know. Do your social thing. Or if you're worshipping Durga to get devotion, like the gopis did, to get connected to Krishna, to marry Krishna, then at that point, you know, sure, Durga's a pure devotee. I mean, sure. It's just, I mean, it's like, let's take Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Would you worship Prabhupada for some material thing? Because Prabhupada's position is a servant of Krishna. I wouldn't go to Prabhupada, my dear Prabhupada, Om Jagadish Hari, Swami Jaya Jagadish, Guru Hari, or whatever, you know, you make up your own mantra. I wouldn't go to Prabhupada for that. I mean, Prabhupada would say, what the hell are you doing? You know, if I went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, please bless me to have a lot of money. You know, so, you know, you have to understand who Durga is. She's a devotee. Srishti Stiti Pralaya, as described in the Brahma Sanhita, she is a devotee. That's her identity. You know, I'm a devotee, or trying to be a devotee, and you come to me and say, Guru Dev, give me blessings to have a lot of money. And I would say, I give you blessings to have pure devotional service. You know, so sometimes people come to me and say, Guru Maharaj, give me your blessings, and I say, bless you to love Krishna. I said, no, that's not the one I want. I want the one where, you know, I get all this opulence. Okay, nice question and appropriate answer. So here's some text questions. I pray to Krishna to be more mercifully engaged in service. That's fine. That's not material. That's fantastic. Also, at times I get scared. What if I forget to serve Krishna when that better situation comes? That it's better not to make such prayer. It is good to make a prayer, and one should be scared. That's actually a good idea. That's the best scared. Another one is, a devotee asked in our reading group, why Srila Prabhupada stresses and mentions over again that the material world runs on sex desire? Which is true, but how? It is true! It's a practical observation. I mean, there was a song that was during the 1960s or earlier, Love Makes the World Go Round. And even there was an English economist, Marshall, who said that it was family life is the impetus for economic development. You know, if one has a family, you got to work. And if you don't have a family, and if you're not engaged, you know, in illicit life, then, you know, just, you may work, but it's not the same impetus. You, of course, there may be other motivations like fame or something like that. We've seen that with people. But still, the main impetus for most of the people is the family life, the wife or the husband, and your little expansions, the children. I mean, that's the main impetus for doing anything. So, which is true, but how to answer in a compassionate way? His context was he has friends, family, he doesn't have the same feelings for everyone. That's natural. There's nothing wrong with it. Prabhupada is not saying to not have, there's a double negative, Prabhupada is not saying to not have affection, special affection for family, friends. He's not saying that. You have this natural affection for the children. If you know, you better have natural affection for the children, or else you're going to be neglectful and abusive towards your children. That's fine. And Prabhupada is saying the world goes on like that. And when one becomes Krishna conscious, then, and as a sannyasi, then one sees everybody equally. Vidyavinaya sampane brahmani gavi hashtani shuni chavis vipakicha pandita samadarshana. The learned and gentle sage sees the dog eater, the Brahmin, the gentle Brahmin, cow, whatever. He sees them all equally. Samadarshi, it means he has equal vision. So, but that's a very exalted stage. And we have to function according to whatever stage we're at right now, so we don't decry family affection. One devotee I was joking to, I said, I bless you, have lots of money, so you can give it all to the deities. I mean, that's fine. If you give it all to the deities, then that's fine. So, that's interesting. So, who else has a question? So you got 1 minute. Oh, you don't even have a minute. There's time for one quick question.
How come we worship Krishna by itself then? Like, can we worship Krishna by itself?
Not a good idea. Krishna's like always...
temple, we have Radharaman temple, Krishna by itself.
No, there's Radharaman. Didn't you hear those words you just spoke?
Okay.
Radha Raman. Radha is not a name of Krishna. Except Radharani is invisible. When they, with the Radha Raman deities, there's actually clothes next to Raman, which is Krishna. Radha Raman Hari. So there's clothes next to Krishna for Radharani. And paraphernalia for Radharani right next to the deity of Radharaman. Of course, Radharaman means Radharani's name. You may not see her, but they worship with that particular mood. So we always, I mean, you may say, what about Ladu Gopal? I mean, that's another deity that's worshipped by many of the devotees. Well, I guess the Ladu is a devotee. Ladu is a devotee, and naturally when you think of Ladu Gopal, Yashodamayi is there at the same time. So, yes, just like, Radha Damodar, it's a month of Damodars that we had, Jai Radha Damodar. So even though the Lord's consort may not be there, be visible, but she is always there. You understand?
Yes.
Or another devotee, just like Pallad Nrisinga. I mean, Lakshmi is naturally there with Nrisingadeva, but may not be visible. We have Pallad Nrisinga. Anyway, Krishna is never alone, Prabhupada said. He always comes with his devotees, paraphernalia, associates, expansions, like the Panchatattva. He's never alone, even though he may appear to be alone sometimes, he's never alone. Okay, on that happy note, thank you all for joining us. We will see everybody tomorrow maybe, at a different time, and a half hour earlier. That's just for tomorrow. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.